This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Paul Violas is a CBS News security consultant, an accomplished author, and a renowned global security and law enforcement expert. With over 35 years of experience, he's dedicated his life to finding solutions for the problems that keep you up at night. This is Security Matters with Paul Violas.
Welcome to Security Matters, where your security matters most. I'm Paul Violas, and this is a CBS News radio production. A big thanks to everybody this year, all of our great listeners that gave us such incredible support. Really appreciate that. A lot of wonderful comments that we got on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. What's the other one? LinkedIn. We even started on LinkedIn this year. Yeah. And just really, really good feedback that put us in the direction of some great shows. So a big thank you to everybody out there. And a big thank you to our producer, Julie, who has just done a phenomenal job this year, was instrumental in creating and making sure that our relationships with the teachers and the police and so many other groups that we've had the pleasure of working with this year, she really pulled that off. She did a great job. Extremely honored right now and very, very happy to be joined by our executive producer, Seth Nyman, today. Seth, obviously responsible for the product itself. I mean, I give him raw material and he turns it into the wonderful show that you listen to each week. So, Seth, thanks for taking time out to join us today.
Always a pleasure, Paul, to be with you.
So, Seth, you know what I want to do, man? I want us to talk about my top five risks coming into 2020 as we kind of usher out 2019 and we begin to embrace 2020. Clearly, there is very hard empirical data pointing towards what the top five are. I thought you and I could discuss that today, share that with everybody as far as here are the things that we need to look out for in 2020, but most importantly, not for the whole, oh my God, we've got, you know, some risks coming up, but most importantly, the mitigation strategies that people can incorporate themselves into their own lives and their own actions, things that they can do to avoid being a victim. So, what do you think about that, buddy? You think that's a good one or what?
Absolutely.
All right. So I'm going to start off with the number one risk that I see facing Americans today, is hate crimes and domestic terrorism. I think as we come into 2020, we're going to see more and more of that evolve and mature. I think we're going to see more and more of it really kind of materialize itself in a very organized fashion. Now we're kind of ushering out 19 in the wake of two very horrific hate crimes. Seth, I know we looked at in Muncie, New York, where the individual attacked a rabbi and his family in their home, and then tried to also gain access to the synagogue armed with a machete. And then less than 24 hours later, we saw an armed individual with a shotgun gain access into a church in Texas, and actually be responsible for shooting a number of different people. Two people died before his life was taken. As we look at hate crimes and domestic terrorism, I want to make sure we benchmark this correctly, because in his infinite wisdom, and I say that sarcastically, the governor of the great state of New York immediately jumped into the political circle, which was no surprise to me, and started classifying what happened as heinous as it was in Muncie, New York, as domestic terrorism. Actually, it wasn't, from what we know so far. It was a hate crime. So I want to benchmark, before I flip this first subject over to Seth for his thoughts, I want to benchmark so all of our listeners understand the difference. Domestic terrorism, and this is defined by a small group called the United States Department of State, which for everybody's information, those are the ones that define these things. So domestic terrorism is defined as premeditated, politically motivated violence perpetrated against non-combatant targets by subnational groups or clandestine agents of those groups, usually intended to influence a large audience. Now, a hate crime is also known as a bias motivated crime or a bias crime. So a hate crime is a prejudice motivated crime which occurs when a perpetrator targets a victim because of their membership or perceived membership in a certain social group or race. Therein lies the disparity between the two. Seth, your thoughts on what you saw happen over the last 72 hours, and more importantly, your thoughts going into 2020 as far as hate crimes and domestic terrorism as a citizen of this country?
Well, it's clearly a hate crime what happened in Muncie. I mean, there's no doubt. I don't know how anyone can even see it otherwise. It also brings up another point about the fact that the man who's responsible for it, this has suffered from a history of mental illness, which I know you've covered in the past. That could be a whole separate show. But regardless of what his problem was, it still is a hate crime. And he targeted Jews and went after them. And the same, I guess you would say the same in Texas as well, right? I mean, when you're targeting a religious group, that's a hate crime, is it not?
It certainly is. Now, and for everybody to understand the difference being, when we looked at incidences over the course of the year, and here at Security Matters, we covered all of those. But when we look at instances where you have a group like a white nationalist or white patriarch party that focuses its sights on for example, the town of Charlottesville, the iconic town of Charlottesville, all right, that's an example of domestic terrorism. That is a premeditated, politically motivated incident of violence that was directly focused on a particular group by a particular group. Now, that's domestic terrorism. We have that large organized group that's focused on that. We also have other instances, which we saw, Seth, we saw in Jersey City, right? We saw in Jersey City about what happened there, which was pretty frightening when you think about other groups that have formed in the United States that are focused their hate on specifically, well, in that particular case, it was Jewish or white community. So as we're all clear, the disparity between domestic terrorism and hate crimes. So as we look down more the road, understand the probability of risk. Now, race and ethnicity make up about 60% of hate crimes in the United States, where about 20% are religious. Now, the interesting part when we break the religious part down is it has the highest level of growth over the last 3 years. And statistically, 58% of religious-focused hate crimes are focused on the Jewish community, 14% on the Islamic community, 20%, a little over 20% focused on the Christian community. Those are hard numbers based on incidences of hate crime in the United States. The question is, as we come into this, we're looking at two different parts in 2020. We're looking at groups and we're looking at individuals. The common denominator between them both, and Seth, you mentioned it, obviously, when we look at this particular individual or these individuals, just in a micro look, the two individuals, the one in Muncie, the one in Texas, both of them had significant histories of mental illness, hospitalizations, legal action taken against them. There is not a snowball's chance in hell that others, people around them, family members, friends, neighbors, coworkers, whomever, did not know what these people were all about. So as we soldier on into 2020, the one thing that we all can do as a society, as a national community, is make sure we do a better job of involvement. You're going to hear that word throughout this particular episode. And I'm calling everybody out on that because we need to do a better job at getting involved. We do a great job at saying, I don't want to get involved. It's none of my business. I don't want this. Am I right or wrong, Seth?
100%.
All right.
I've been guilty of it myself.
Well, you know what? We all have. But at the end of the day, this is our country. And if we want to make a change in it, then get involved. Don't tell me. No one is going to tell me. No one is going to tell me that these two mullet heads that perpetrated these heinous, despicable crimes that people didn't know that it was foreseeable. Our problem, we need to get involved. When it comes to hate crimes and domestic terrorism, ladies and gentlemen, number one, we know that domestic terrorist groups use social media. We know that for a fact. We need to do a better job at reporting what we see and what we see and what we read and what we hear over social media. We need to do a better job at that. Hate crimes. Ladies and gentlemen, hate is at the center and at the very core of violence. Hate begets ignorance. Ignorance begets violence. It is an age-old, tragic methodology that follows into where we are today. The simplest path here, we need to get involved and we need to open our mouths and write and speak about what we see that doesn't work. We know this doesn't work. Why is it that we're hearing the ex-wife and family members of the shooter in Texas come up and say, you know, really, I'm not surprised. Ugh. You're not surprised. Really? You're not surprised. We're going to cover in January, we're going to have an episode on what's going to be happening today going forward into 2020 about securing houses of worship and some of the things that need to be done and some of the things that clearly don't need to be done. But that will be a separate piece.
Well, Paul, real quick, I mean, I know it's a separate piece, but how do you think it was handled in Texas? Do you think they did a good job? They're getting, you know, they're getting some credit for diffusing something that could have been a lot worse.
I think two parts about that, Seth, and I have been on air with CBS Radio and TV, but primarily CBS Radio now for the last 72 hours. I will tell you, with affiliates all over the United States, which is really the part of the power and the beauty of CBS News Radio because of its reach. But I will tell you this unequivocally. What we saw happen in Texas, there were 242 souls that were in that church at that time. An individual armed with a long gun came in, and if it were not for the individuals, the two, specifically the member of the security team at that church, that responded as thoroughly and expeditiously as he did, he mitigated that risk within 6 seconds. If he had not, given the sheer number of people inside that church at that time, there's no telling how many lives would have been lost. There's absolutely no telling. However, the caution flag has got to go up here. We can't say that that is the benchmark, because clearly not every house of worship has someone in their congregation that's been a firearms instructor for law enforcement for 3 decades. Not everybody has that.
Right.
So we're going to need to come up with a certification process. If houses of worship feel this is the direction, and clearly it is, we need to come up with a certification process for those that they're going to employ in that particular regard. We're going to have to do that. But I think that's, you know, that's going to be coming forthwith. There's no question about that.
Do you think local authorities will get involved as well?
I think they already are. I mean, I look at, you know, like, you know, I look at the churches that my wife and I attend, and clearly on one of them, I won't mention the name, but on one of them, there are deputy sheriffs there at every mass, and at least two. So, and I'm unaware of any threat pointed directly at that particular church, but, you know, I see this becoming, you know, very much part of a trend. So that being said, our number one hate crimes, domestic terrorism, that's definitely something that's going to be on the top of the list coming at us in 2020. But remember, the strategy there is so much is on us. Those folks, especially groups, communicate over social media. Those folks have certain warning signs. They display certain behavior that we need to do a better job of getting involved in. Our number two, active shooters. Can't talk about what's going to happen in 2020 without looking at active shooters. As of, I don't, you probably already know this, Seth, but for our listeners, as of December 22nd, 2019, how's that for an accurate stat? As of December 22nd.
Perfect.
I mean, come on, seriously. As of December 22nd, 2019, there were, Seth, do you want to guess how many mass shootings there were in 2019?
I'm going to say 32.
Ah! I'm going to give you another chance, Seth. I'm just giving you one more chance because I'm going to tell you that you were so off that I need a calculator to make up the difference.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm low?
You're low. Oh. Let me just tell you this. As of December 22nd, 2019, 423 mass shootings have occurred.
And how do you define a mass shooting? By how?
A mass shooting is defined as an incident in which four or more people, excluding the perpetrators, are shot in one location at roughly the same time.
Wow.
Okay.
How many?
423 mass shootings have occurred in 2019. Averages 1.19 mass shootings per day. In these shootings, over 1,604 people were injured. Over 466 died, for a total of 2,070 victims.
Wow.
Okay, the part that we need to be concerned with, in addition to that, obviously, is the fact that this is consistently growing. Now, we can talk about a lot of different things as it relates to gun violence and the possession of guns and the amount of shootings that occur in the United States as compared to other countries. And I will not push back on that for you. I promise you that. But what we need to be very careful of is when we talk about active shooters, we need to understand that there are different categories of active shooters. There is the school violence active shooter. Now, Seth, as a parent, you and Melissa, are you guys concerned about this with your kids going to school? Is this something you guys talk about at the table at night? I mean, what?
How can we not be concerned about it? I mean, it's live and it's happening. So we feel like our school does a decent job of getting the kids in and keeping the doors locked. But, you know, it only takes a second for something to happen.
Well, it's true. And when we talk about the silos of active shooters, I'm only starting with school shootings. But the thing that that all of my parents out there right now, and all of our teachers, especially our great partnership, Randy Weingarten, a very big plus out to you. Hope you have a great new year. That we're very grateful for about our partnership with the American Federation of Teachers, over 1.7 million represented in this country, and how much we love our teachers. 88% of active shooters in schools have leakage. Now, what does that mean to everybody? It means that 88%, it's an FBI stat, 88% of school violence shooters have told people what they were going to do, when they were going to do it, and how they were going to do it. If that is the case, which obviously it is, then the way that we immediately move to mitigate that is we do a better job at educating our teachers, allowing our teachers the time to exercise what they need to in order to intervene preemptively. And we need to educate the environment inside schools about what these signs are and how to report them. Because if we do, we are going to drastically in 2020 reduce that number. But I promise you that if we do not do that, as we close 2020, a year from now, we'll be talking about the same damn thing. So when it comes to active shooters and it comes to school violence, the way to mitigate that, we need to educate on the warning signs, because we already know that 88% of active shooters inside the schools are talking about what they're going to do before they do it. As a parent, Seth, what's your call on that?
If you have to take, I guess you have to take a kid seriously, especially since it's happened. I can tell you, my oldest was playing Fortnite. You familiar with that?
Through my grandsons, yeah. I am. I have no idea what it is.
Well, but he decided one day to draw on the back of his notebook all the different guns they use in Fortnite, and we got called into the school, and they were like, "We know him. We know he's not, you know, we know him very well. That's why we didn't bring this up to a further authority. We just wanted to make you guys aware of it." And we had to explain to him that you want to draw guns? I mean, we don't even want you drawing guns, but if you are, you got to do it at home, and you can draw what you want, but you can't draw guns on your school notebook.
This is the society we live in.
Yeah. I mean, back when we were kids, we could do that. We could do whatever. There wasn't people coming in shooting up the schools. No. But now I'm glad that they told us, and I'm glad that they were on top of it, you know?
This is where we are today. And so when we look at active shooters and we look at what's coming into 2020, let me finish this part of this by just saying this. There are different silos. Active shooters fall into schools. Obviously, there's a different demographic of shooter there. We just talked about that. They fall into workplaces, which we know traditionally workplace violence shooters do brag about get even plans. Again, this goes back to employees everywhere, that hopefully your employer has a workplace violence policy that clearly stipulates what's acceptable and unacceptable behavior, specifically talking about threats. Threats are unacceptable and need to be reported preemptively. If you're just calling when and you've just calling HR telling your supervisor in the bottom of the ninth inning, shame on you and expect something to happen. Reporting early workplace violence shootings can prevent that, will prevent that, but you need to get on top of that. We also have the active shooter that goes to soft targets, right? We know that malls and clearly special events like concerts and things like that are targets as well. And we, on the law enforcement side, have changed an approach that we saw in 2019, and you are going to see a lot more in 2020. And I will give you, I can give you scenario after scenario after scenario, but one thing that we are doing on the law enforcement side and the security side to help keep us safer in 2020 is police have changed their response protocols. I can tell you right now, instead of sitting back, developing a perimeter, opening lines of communication with a shooter, police are running in at that very second in the line of fire and engaging the shooter or shooters. And with this different type of response, we are going to see a reduction in active shooters at special events. We've seen a progression in 2019 and a change in staffing, but the with respect to special events, which is great on our side. But the problem we're going to experience in 2020 is we're about 28% down now in staffing in the United States with police. 28% down. My nephew is a police officer in Charlotte, and I am incredibly proud of Joseph. He's a great cop. It's not just because he's my nephew, because he's a great cop. But I can tell you right now, I sure wouldn't have wanted to have him take that job when he first brought it up. I mean, there's not a snowball's chance in hell that I'd wear a camera around my neck. Would you? Would anybody? And my question to all of you is, would you want to wear a camera around your neck so that when you went to work, everything you did and everything you said was monitored and recorded? That's a fair question. And if you wouldn't mind, write us and let me know, because I'd really be interested in implementing that outside of police. But nonetheless, right? But nonetheless, we're down, Seth. We're down over a quarter. Over a quarter of staffing. So
You think that's one of the primary reasons? It's just you're kind of setting yourself up for a no-win situation?
You know, I don't know. I mean, the only way I could really answer that from a valid perspective is really go around and speak to the guys. But I can tell you, after now coming into January, it will be my 40th year in service. And I will tell you that based on those that I know, I think that has an awful lot to do with it. I think the fact that police are not trusted by their communities. I think the fact that we ran to this whole political correctness of it's cool to hate cops. It's right to hate cops. It's right not to trust cops. Where the hell did you get off saying that? I mean, where does anybody in this country really feel you're good enough to condemn an entire work demographic, an entire vertical market? Because I'll tell you, if you think you are, all I'm asking you, come on this show and tell me what you do for a living, and let's pick apart that vertical demographic. We have an opportunity to do something about active shooters, but we need more trained cops, and we're down cops, so expect that to continue. The only thing we can do is report early warning signs, but expect that to continue. Now, when you talk about the one that's going to carry the highest frequency is my number three on the list. And my number three on the list is cybercrime. And I can tell you there's some terrifying stats when it comes to cybercrime, but there isn't anything more terrifying when we look at just the sheer numbers. And I'm going to share some numbers with you right now as far as 2019 and 2020 that they're gut-wrenching. Now, Seth, you and I have covered a lot of shows when it comes to cyber. But as I look at year end and I look at coming into 2020, let me share some with all of you. over 780,000 records were lost per day. Cyber criminals, being that they're constantly finding new technologies to target victims with, the one thing that I offer for everyone, and this has worked, it has worked with all of our clients, and it works with more and more clients we serve, is an annual cyber health exam. And the reason I offer that is this, being that we know that cyber criminals are constantly finding new technologies to breach, it's important, just like you go to the doctor every year for an annual checkup, make sure you get an annual cyber health exam from a cybersecurity expert at least once a year. It only takes about 15 minutes, but it'll make sure that what you're doing is, you know, in compliance with countermeasures as they are on a daily basis and a yearly basis. Some stats to kind of hold you to that. For those of you that believe in mobile apps, Seth, I know right, a lot of people you know a lot of believe in mobile apps. Right?
I do too.
Over 24,000 malicious mobile apps are blocked every day in the United States. Over 24,000 malicious mobile apps are blocked every day.
Wow.
Right.
I worry about that with my, you know, my oldest has his own phone, you know, and I got
to. Well, see, that's a problem. That's a problem. And we have to understand about cybercrime is that there are points of entry that can be blocked, but we need to up our game as Americans. I'm going to tell you right now, do not expect the government to protect you. They will do whatever they can. The government is not going to protect you. You need to protect yourself. If you do not, that's fine. That's your call. Just don't complain about it. And don't start wondering, how did this happen to me? When all of a sudden your most personal information is being shared over the internet. When pictures of your family are being shared everywhere. When conversations you wished weren't reported and repeated are being shared over the internet. When your finances have been breached. This is the thing we need to look at. When it comes to one particular part of our top five risks facing us in 2020, that's something we can do to prevent, it's right here. Now, you want to talk about a business model that works? In 2015, annual cost of cybercrime globally was $3 trillion.
Oh, my God.
Now, this is what's forecasted. What's forecasted? By 2021, which means over this next year, it's expected to go to $6 trillion.
That's crazy.
That's right. More than 60% of fraud originates from mobile devices. Fraud in general, more than 60% originates from mobile devices. Why? It's really simple, ladies and gentlemen, because we're easy.
We want all that accessibility at our fingertips, but you know, we have to make sure we protect ourselves from anything that can happen. We take it for granted because you always think it's not going to happen to me.
Right. Until it does.
Yeah.
Right. Until it does. And then everyone starts to get upset over, oh God, what do I do now? Listen, when the genie's out of the bottle, it ain't getting back in. So we need to do a better job at policing ourselves preemptively. A couple of stats, and then I'm going to tell you what we need to do. But remember, a couple of things here that are really, really important is the fact that vulnerabilities can occur at the outer level of your perimeter at home. So when you sit at home and you're communicating, you have a router, and that router that, you know, that box is coming from your cable company, and that gives you a port. It gives you an open highway to communicate with the outside world. Now, in any system, whether it's personal, residential, corporate, there's going to be a port or an alleyway, an open pathway that's going to have to remain open. Most ports are closed, but want to have to remain open because that is how you communicate on the internet. Absent that, you're all blocked in. But you have to make sure that that port is monitored like a toll bridge. And if you're not, then basically you're letting anybody outside your house come into your home. So I'm going to start with home, I'm going to go to work, and we'll move on. With home, the simplest thing to do, ladies and gentlemen, this is simple stuff. Attach a firewall. This will not cost much. You can have God willing, you have a local cyber person or advanced IT security person there. Have them install a firewall device, it's a small box, to your particular router mechanism that you have from your cable company. What that does is it installs a level of encryption. An encryption is a mathematical algorithm that's more like an electric key that provides a very high level of security for your data. Data in rest, meaning what sits in your computer, and data in motion, that with which you send. The simplest way to protect yourself, and you know, Seth, you know, I talked about like Alexa and these other devices getting hacked and your home security, right? The Ring device. Remember we talked about that?
Yes, we did.
They're not getting hacked though, Seth. Those devices aren't getting hacked. Your home system is getting hacked. And because they communicate from Wi-Fi through your home system, that's how they're getting compromised. So if you have a baby monitor, if you have an Alexa or something like a Google or something like that, any other device, home cameras, you don't run them through an open internet. You run them through a protected firewall. Put a firewall in there that has a high level of encryption. And ladies and gentlemen, you are now a million times safer because cyber criminals operate under what's called negative migration. Negative behavior migrates to the path of least resistance. If they park outside your house, and please, for those of you that are listening that are saying, well, I live in a gated community, right next to Jumbo Shrimp is one of the greatest oxymorons of all time. Gated community means nothing. Just means that you have probably a hundred or two convicted felons that are moving in inside and out of your neighborhood every day. So put that to rest. If you're at your home, put a firewall, attach it to your system, and when someone tries to get in, they'll be blocked, they'll go to the neighbor. That's the best you can do. As far as a company, companies need to be very, very careful. In 2020, we have had a monstrous increase. In 2019, we've had a monstrous increase in ransomware attacks in the United States. I mean, it's just crazy about how often this has actually happened. I looked this up. And in this year alone, we showed an increase of over 266% of ransomware attacks in corporations over the previous year. 266%.
Wow.
So as a civilian, I'll ask you a direct question, Seth. Why do you think businesses, ransomware attacks on businesses have increased so much? What would make you think that? What's your thought on that?
Because they've had success. And I think... It's all over the news. All these big companies have been breached. So I think that the light bulb goes off these guys who are capable of pulling this off, or companies or countries or whoever's doing it. And it's easy. And companies probably just like us as people think it's not going to happen to us, you know, and they don't take the right precautions. And I think it seems like the bigger companies are taking more and more precautions. Even the company I work for, as you know, they're always testing their employees by sending phishing emails and stuff and seeing if they react to them. And so I imagine companies are taking those precautions, but I'm sure there's plenty more that are not. And so I think it's just an easy target.
It's very true. And the key part for all of our business owners out there, or people in an executive level positions that have the ability to voice concerns over how to protect your data. A couple of things to remember. IT is critical to the success of every company, but an information technology professional is not a cybersecurity professional, okay? It's sort of like asking your dentist to do heart surgery. The two are not the same. They're both critical, but they hold two different jobs. A cybersecurity professional is someone that looks at it from an anti-crime perspective, which is what you need in setting up your system. An IT person can monitor it and keep it healthy, but a cybersecurity person is going to look at it through the eyes of an advanced hacker to make sure that the pathways those hackers are going to take are preemptively mitigated. Now, what we do know for sure is that ransomware is going to increase. We know that the numbers are going to increase. We know that 90% of hackers are using high levels of encryption, which are locking companies out of their own systems. That's a fact. We know that to be true. We know that the healthcare industry will quadruple in 2020 with respect to ransomware attacks. Quadruple. So for those of you that go to a doctor, go to a hospital, have any connection on the healthcare industry, I would be pretty damn concerned about that one. You need to ask your doctors and your healthcare industries how what they're doing to protect data, especially from ransomware attacks, because the last thing you want is being in surgery and find out that computer the doctor's using isn't working.
Ooh.
So, yeah, right. So keep an eye on that one. 30% of phishing emails are opened. Phishing, or really electronic pretexting, is primarily what the methodology used, the attack trajectory that's used to get into corporate servers. And last but not least, if something that's the rest didn't wake you up, this one will. Companies typically take over 6 months to notice a data breach.
Wow.
Right. So when it comes to the home, remember, firewall, have it installed, keep your system safe. You can put your cameras, your security system, your devices like an Alexa or Google, you can put all that in to make sure that it's run through your firewall so it's being protected. And last but not least, and we'll get into this just in a minute here, when it gets into homes, make sure your system is not being projected to you remotely on your phone, that app again, over an IP address, where you might as well just put your IP address out on your lawn because everyone else is going to know who it is. Our number four coming into the year is residential security. And the reason why I'm touching on this is because as we come into 2020, we've got some pretty alarming stats. One, this so far we've averaged 2.5 million burglaries per year. And right now, as in 2019, a burglary has occurred every 13 seconds in the United States. Now, wow. Home invasion, right. 13 seconds, right. That's a burglary. Now, understand, a burglary of that home, someone enters and remains within without the permission of the owner. Your burglaries, what separates robberies is now robberies, there's a face-to-face confrontation, which leads us into home invasion crime stats. 38% of assaults and 60% of rapes. Let's say this again. 38% of assaults and 60% of rapes occur during home invasions. In 2020, over 2 million homes will experience a break-in or a burglary, a home invasion or a burglary this year, over 2 million. And the key to this is very clear. The key to this is making sure that you vet the contractors that come into your homes, because I can tell you right now, a large majority of home invasions and burglaries are coming from people that have already been in your home. And that you make sure your home security system is layered. Remember three words: cheap is expensive. So once your home has been violated, you very rarely get over that. And if you're renting, remember, renters are more likely to be robbed than homeowners. So this applies to you as well. Home systems need to be layered. For a residential home, make sure you have good exterior lighting. Make sure you have some type of system, a voice video intercom at the front door. Do not ever open your front door without knowing who is on the other side. End of story. Can't emphasize that enough. Push-ins, home invasions start at that front door. And don't be misguided when you see somebody wearing, you know, a brown uniform or, you know, blue uniform thinking they're from one of the overnight carriers. Make sure you identify who they are before you open up. And if you're not sure, sell them, leave the package there. If they say, well, you have to sign for it, say, leave the note. I can't come to the door right now. I'll go pick it up. If you're not sure, don't open the door. And make sure your system is layered. The last thing you want is a reactive-based home system. What is that? That means it's only activated once the alarm goes off. Remember, there's an average of 8 seconds from the time someone gets in your home to a face-to-face confrontation. That is not what you want. Now, you're a homeowner, Seth. What do you think about that?
I think I need to do a better job of protecting my house.
Well, when we think about the numbers here, right? When we think about the numbers. There are systems out there, and I'm not going to mention them, and I'm not going to mention them to be quite honest with you because, listen, you know, I'm not going to go promoting other companies right now, one over the other. But I will tell you there are systems out there that can help you that are inexpensive. If you're renting, there are systems that you can install that are very effective you can take with you that you own. And if you're a homeowner, let's say a traditional residential home, a house, then you want to make sure that those systems are layered. Exterior lighting, exterior voice enunciation, contacts, windows and doors, glass break, window film. Now, I will tell you without question that my colleagues at Armor One are the best in the business when it comes to window film. You want window film, you want something someone's not going to smash to get inside your house, you go to Armor, you go to Armor One. And you want more information, always go to my website on that. But they are by far the best. I use them. I use them not only in my house, but I use them across the board with all my clients, residential and commercial. The best thing around. Very, very best thing around. Honest to God, they're wonderful. And last but not least, travel risk. International travel risk is something that we're going to see consistently increase in 2020. And the reason why, we're in election year. We're a moving target right now. The way that we have managed the country is despicable, and we have significantly reduced the value and the respect of the American brand outside the United States. And that anti-American sentiment is alive and well. I experienced it personally this year outside the United States. I won't say where, but just shocking. I mean, from someone like myself that's traveled internationally extensively, I was stunned at the anti-American sentiment that I experienced in countries that, quite frankly, you would never have expected that from. The keys to international travel, anyone listening, by the way, who wants to receive, we put out a travel risk report every Monday that basically, and it's electronic, it will show you where the risks are, things that aren't even being reported on the news yet. Everywhere in the world. If you ever want that, all you have to do is send us a note at violas.com, and I'm happy, as a listener to the show, I'm happy to include you in that list. But the key things are vet your itinerary. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care where you're going. Vet your itinerary. Express kidnaps are up, and I can tell you without question that Americans will continue to be targeted. No matter where you go, the simplest thing is to vet your itinerary. From wheels down, make sure your ground transportation is reliable. Make sure you understand what the climate is as to where you're going. Make sure that the hotel that you're staying in has not had problems reported to police vis-a-vis employees of that particular resort being accused of sexually assaulting and groping and going after Americans. Very, very common. If you have a student traveling abroad this year, make sure you vet the itinerary and make sure you vet the host family. So much can be done before leaving the country to make sure that you have a good trip. And last but not least on this subject, I will leave you with this. When you leave this country, you have no rights. None. Years ago, we haven't always been loved. We haven't always been respected, but we sure as hell have always been feared. We are not feared anymore. So what that means to you is if, God forbid, something happens to your child while they're studying abroad or you while you're traveling abroad, we have a really difficult time undoing that. Not that it can't be done and not that it isn't done, but you don't want to go down that road. Vet the itineraries. And those, ladies and gentlemen, are our top five risks and mitigation strategies for 2020. Before I close, Seth, anything you want to tell our listeners before we get into 2020?
Heed your advice and have a happy, healthy, safe new year.
And I echo that. I just want to tell everybody that 2019's been a pleasure. Certainly, we've learned a lot from what's happened this year. But more importantly, we have a really good trajectory on what's going to happen next year. And I think that we can do a lot about it. But what I'll leave you with is that we need to do a better job as an American community of getting involved. We see things and we hear things that we know are not right. And we need to do a better job at getting involved. And I think if we can embrace that, then we can certainly make sure that we reduce the number of crimes, but more importantly, we reduce the number of times we become victims. And that's the biggest thing. So on behalf of everybody here at CBS News Radio and, of course, the great staff at Security Matters, we wish everybody a very safe, a very peace-filled, a very healthy, and a very happy 2020. And we'll be speaking to you next week. Have a great day. Be safe. Be well. God bless.
Thanks for listening to Security Matters with Paul Violas. The podcast is produced by Seth Nyman and CBS News Radio. For more podcasts from CBS News, visit cbsaudio.com/podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.